Welcome to the Go Health Podcast. I'm Gillian Strain, Chief Exec of Go Health, an organization with a vision to enable churches and individual Christians to be a healing presence in the world. And this is a Go Health Podcast. It's for people who want to connect health and faith and make a difference in the world. Today, we're joined by Rachel Michael, a dance movement psychotherapist and the founder of Embodied Perspective, a project that helps people explore the benefits of connecting with their body in prayer, reflection, and healing. So Rachel has an MA in theology, and her work brings together movement, faith, and mission in powerful ways. And she's recently published her first book with Grove, Embodied Prayer as Mission, a response to cultural change. Rachel, it is a joy to have you on the podcast. How are you today?
Yes, I'm well. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
It's great to have you. And I'm just thinking, we haven't talked much about dance really ever on the podcast. So it's great to chat about this. Have you always been a dancer? What first drew you to dance?
I started going to ballet as a child. I think quite a lot of girls do that. I was about six, I think, when I first went to ballet lessons, and I didn't really take to it actually straight away, but we moved house and started going to a different class with a different teacher. And I just began to really fall in love with it. I just felt I could really express myself through this particular mode of creative expression. I could really put my heart and soul in it. And I just began to feel that it was really something that I wanted to devote myself to professionally.
Wow, that's such a powerful expression. You fell in love with it. I mean, I also had ballet and, in fact, tap lessons when I was a child. And the teacher called my parents and they thought I had some kind of medical issue because I would spend the whole time going to the loo to get out of it. So I guess we all fall in love with different things. And dance, as you say there, I think you use the expression, is there something there about the use of our body being able to say things that maybe words can't?
Well, I think so, yeah. It just transcends words, really. I think for me, it was something about the non-verbal, because I think there's certain things which we're not, you know, entirely conscious of. They're not sort of foreground. They're not sort of at the tip of our tongue. You know, it's difficult to articulate some things. And there is a whole realm of knowledge that can't actually be verbally mediated. It has to be expressed in a non-verbal way. And so I think that that's what was really speaking to me.
And you've brought together, and we're going to get into this, you've brought together your love of dance, you're falling in love with moving your body and using it to express stuff, maybe beyond words. You joined that together with theology and faith. How did that joining together bit happen? Did you always dance and then found theology and then put them together? Or is your relationship with God part of this love you found for dance?
Well, I think the theology part came in later. I mean, I did pursue a short career as a classical dancer, but then I began to feel that there was perhaps more to me as a person than I could really express in that way. It's a very demanding profession. It was very all-consuming. And I just sort of felt that I was kind of being called on to something different. I didn't really know what it was, actually. Over time, I just began to feel I wanted to carry on dancing, but I wanted to work with dance in a way that was helping other people. And I trained in dance movement therapy, as it was then. And that training really opened something to me, which was much less to do with performance and much more to do with the connection with one's inner life.
Tell me more about this. So you train, it's a dance movement psychotherapist, and this project, Embodied Perspective. How does it work? So what happens in a session? So I know what happens in traditional psychotherapy because I've had that. You sit down and you talk. How is dance movement psychotherapy different? How would a session work?
Well, dance movement psychotherapy is the use of movement and dance and body awareness to further personal integration and growth. It's based on the belief that there's an interrelationship between body, mind, soul, and spirit. And many dance movement therapists work in all sorts of different fields and different contexts. And, you know, it can take many different forms. But for me, one of the beginning parts is helping people to just cultivate a kind of compassionate self-awareness So in a way, it's about helping people just to connect with the body, to be with themselves, to be with what is.
So for example, if I could just use it in an example. So say if somebody comes to you and they're in grief, they've suffered a terrible loss. Do they have to be a dancer in order to engage with dance movement psychotherapy?
No, nobody has to be a dancer in order to engage with dance movement psychotherapy. I see the word dance in some ways as being about the dance of life, the dance of thoughts, the dance of memories, the dance of emotions, the dance of intentions. I mean, in fact, physicists tell us that at the heart of reality, everything is a kind of dance of energy. And so that's kind of how I see it in some ways with dance movement psychotherapy. When we connect with the body, we're connecting with a flow of movement and energy. And so there's no need to have any professional experience. It's not really based on technical skill or athleticism or anything like that. It's just movement as a kind of raw material, which everyone uses really all the time. We're always moving. Even when we're still, there is still movement happening.
So in traditional psychotherapy, they would see the talking as a way to unlock or reintegrate some part of yourself. Is it the same theory with dance? When you talk about connecting with the energy, is that the healing that you're looking for, some kind of reconnecting?
Yeah, we're looking for a connecting, a reconnecting with aspects which perhaps a client might feel uncomfortable with or feel conflicted about. But it's also about affirming what is already healthy in a person. You're not sort of necessarily zoning into the problem area. It's about the whole. And it's about just attuning to what is there at a sensory level, where we're talking about the physical senses, or the kinesthetic sense, the sense of movement, or the felt sense, the sense of how things are held in the body. The body just mediates the whole of a person, and that includes what is healthy and life-giving and enabling us to flourish, as well as that which is perhaps broken or hurting or limited or conflicted.
And in traditional talking psychotherapy, the relationship with the therapist itself is really fundamental.
Yes.
I've got to build up trust and creating a safe space.
Yes.
How do you do that with the dance? Do you dance with the person as well? Or how do you build up that relationship?
I mean, I think this is not really about dance fundamentally. It often starts in very small ways. I mean, I can give you an example of one client who I work with. She actually is comfortable with dance and she has a dance background, but we don't start with that. We start by she just comes in, she just shares with me how she's doing, what's been happening for her. And then we just take time just to sit. And with her agreement, I suggest she might just sit and attune to her body, actually feel into her body, where she's seated, feeling into the feet on the floor, feeling the chair underneath her. Perhaps feeling the surface of the skin, perhaps feeling the flow of the breath. And as she does that, she kind of maybe picks up on something that's there for her that she would like to explore. And that might be a physical sensation, or it might be something that she's still thinking about from the week. And as she's speaking, very often movement comes out as we're speaking. You know, there are movement cues that we can pick up on as a therapist. So she might be kind of talking about a conflict and, you know, her hands come together and there's a kind of, perhaps a sort of one hand kind of pressing against the other. Or there are these movement cues that kind of give us resources that we can pick up and work towards. So again, you know, with her agreement, I might just suggest that she kind of spends a bit of time feeling into that, seeing what's there in her body, how that wants to perhaps develop, and what it might say about what she's going through. And we sort of develop it from there.
What about music? I mean, you often think about dance and music go together. Is that part of helping people express?
It can be, but I tend to use music that's fairly neutral, that's kind of not too giving too much of an emotional steer, that doesn't kind of intrude too much. I suppose with other clients, you know, you might work with movement to perhaps help someone to just tune a little bit into a different emotion.
I just got in my mind that the flip side of what you described there would seem very gentle and peaceful and just working with the body. What if somebody's, and this might be a really silly question, Rachel, like it's got anger, but it's really buried. Is this to say that they put on some loud music and help them get it out of their body and they can express the rage that's got trapped? Is that the same type of thing?
It just depends entirely on the individual client. It depends where they're at in their process of healing. You know, anger quite often has to do with a trauma experience. And in dance movement psychotherapy, we work quite carefully with trauma because people can very easily become overwhelmed. So I can give you an example of something which sort of speaks into what you were asking. I've had a client who gave me permission to share this example today. So she is someone who's been working through deep trauma in her life. And as she was talking about a particular aspect of her experience, I noticed that her hands were moving together a lot. They were kind of clenching and unclenching, and she was moving her hands together and moving her fingers over each other. And I asked her whether it would be okay to just give some attention to that and see what was there for her. And so with her agreement, she just took some time just to kind of feel into that movement of her hands and what reflected on what that was expressing, what that might be holding for her. And she said that she felt like a bottle with a cork in it and the bottle was about to explode. So that's a very, very vivid image and, you know, expresses a very strong emotional state. But I knew that we had to work carefully with it. So I suggested that she might just imagine taking the cork off the bottle just a tiny little bit and seeing what wanted to come out. And she felt okay to do that. And as she did that, then she made some really strong, forceful movements from her center out to the sides, really kind of pushing out with hands flexed, really feeling into her personal space and the edges of her space, really filling out into the space around her. And afterwards, she just expressed that that was a really liberating moment for her because she had always been told that she was too big. And so that she had kind of grown up feeling as though she had to constrain herself the whole time.
Yeah, wow.
And this feeling of being able to just open out and really fill out the space really liberated her and had a big impact on her sense of self, you know, just really brought in a different sense of self for her.
That's an incredibly powerful story, Rachel, and thank you for sharing it and getting the permission to share it as well, because we often reference The Body Keeps the Score, that book written after the Vietnam War, and the study of trauma, the study of post-traumatic stress disorder, and how so much is locked in the body. And if one's suffering from PTSD, then they can often be stuck, can't they, in flop or drop, and with a very low energy state, stuck state, or stuck in fight or flight, which is a sort of hyper energetic, hyper aroused, hyper vigilant state. Both very much a bodily state, aren't they?
It is.
And have you seen with your work examples of when that tuning in that you're talking about? I see now what you're saying, dance doesn't quite cover it. It's like tuning into the body work, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Well, there's certainly ways of working with the body and movement that resource the nervous system. We can do grounding work, feeling into the floor, anchoring, feeling the solidness of the ground underneath. You know, just self-touch can be quite soothing, rocking movements, shaking movements, releasing.
Weighted blankets, things like that can help, can't they?
Yes, yeah. All of these things kind of help to support that part of the nervous system that enables us to recover from anxiety and overwhelm.
This embodied approach is not new, but it feels quite new compared to traditional talking therapies. How do people find your work or your the type of work that you offer, Rachel? Do you find they've tried other things and they don't work, and that's why they end up working with you? Or are people seeking people's knowledge, you know, now such that they know this is embodied and they know sitting and talking might not work for them?
Well, yes, I think there are a lot of people now who are looking for embodied approaches, both to therapy and to spiritual practice. And for me, it tends to emerge from prayer sessions that I facilitate online or workshops that I've done. And then people come and say, you know, I'd like to do a bit more. You know, do you work one-to-one? And, you know, I am licensed for private practice, so I can take that kind of work if people approach me for that.
So let's talk a bit about this link to prayer and spirituality, that angle on your work, because for many Christians, they've maybe grown up or somehow absorbed this idea that the body is something to be suspicious of, and certainly in prayer. I'm sure this is something you've come across, but I wonder how you help people who have that view of the body and how you invite them into a healing space that takes the body very seriously.
Yeah, I mean, it can be a challenge. I think the people who come to me are probably people who are really seeking something along those lines. So, I mean, there's a number of different questions there, I think. So, I mean, there's quite a simple process that I go through, which is really like a mindfulness meditation. So I just kind of help people to connect with the body through sensation, through breathing, through movement, and make connections as we go along with perhaps scripture passages or short excerpts, short phrases of scripture. And of course, there's always a link between the body, the breath and the spirit, which helps people to orientate themselves to prayer as they're just connecting with their body, that connection between breath and spirit, in which in scripture, you know, these same words is used interchangeably quite often. So that's an immediate link. And then there are other links we can make with particularly using Psalm 139. There's all sorts of references there to God seeing our frame, God knowing our substance, God laying a hand on us and being fearfully and wonderfully made, and all of that really helps to locate these practices, which might be a little bit unusual for people, within the context of prayer. So I think that bringing those two together is often really, really important.
It's like the church is sort of discovering once again this deep interlink we have with our spiritual.
Exactly.
It's so interesting, Rachel. We've just released a course on spiritual intelligence, which is the scientific study of wisdom. In effect, you know, neuroscientists, psychologists, all getting involved to measure spiritual wisdom, and the way that they suggest, thank you, science, that we can increase our spiritual wisdom is through embodied prayer practices.
Oh, right.
So it's been a delightful course to write, because we really engage with these top science people. And be able to say, the church has been doing this for thousands of years. So things like kneeling and posture and breath, also important in connecting with God. But what you're bringing out here is the connection, the next step on, is their importance in our healing journeys as well, right?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
I'd like to move to just to make the next leap, if I can, because you write about this stuff, embodiment, prayers, therapy, as mission, right? What do you mean by that? Let's get into that.
I was motivated to write about embodied prayer and make links with mission, because I'm just aware that so many people outside the church seeking and choosing, prioritizing forms of spiritual practice which really value embodiment. The body is central to many of these practices. Thinking, for example, of Tai Chi, yoga, five rhythms dance, mindfulness meditation. So many people are drawn to these practices, and so many people feel that in order to flourish as spiritual beings, they need to prioritize the integration of body, mind, and spirit. And so it seems to me that there's a kind of gap opening up between, you know, people who might call themselves spiritual but not religious, and maybe not perhaps relate to the church particularly easily. And Christian church-going people, the spiritual forms, the ideas about embodiment, the valuing of embodiment, the sort of teaching about embodiment and the practice of embodied forms of spiritual growth, or whatever you want to call it, prayer, they're just completely different. And I really feel that unless the church can kind of reach out to somehow cross that gap, then our mission will be impeded, because it's not just a passing phase. You know, this movement towards the wisdom of the body is underpinned by the emerging science, which you've just referred to. And it's really revolutionary for our culture, because for so many years, but thousands of years, really, there's been this underlying belief in the dualistic, in the dualism of mind and body.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree with you more, Rachel, on that. But you know what? It just feels like there's quite a few obstacles to get that we together have to get over. Because when I think church, dance, movement, I have two thoughts. And it's not that I agree with them, but there's two things that come straight to mind. It's the arguments that vicars have about having yoga in church halls. Always causes an argument. It's one of those things.
Yes.
Or Tai Chi. And also maybe folk that are in church, especially in Britain, there can be in some community a certain stiffness of the body in church. And also maybe some people got negative experiences or worries that we're going to have to do liturgical dance and start running around. So there's lots of obstacles. How do you suggest we get around some of them? Or have you had examples of good practice?
I mean, I agree that, you know, the things you've identified are obstacles. I think one of the main obstacles that I encounter is that when we encourage people to connect with their body, we cannot connect with the body at depth without kind of drawing our attention from the external world to ourselves. And we don't really get much help, in my experience of Christian teaching, with that kind of aspect of drawing into ourselves, focusing on ourselves in the context of prayer. You know, maybe in prayer ministry you get that, but not generally. It's almost as though our selfhood has to be kind of left out. We always need to somehow reach out to others or reach up to God. And that's even though Jesus has, you know, Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is within you. We don't really get much help. And I think that we also tend to overemphasize the negative. So in the Book of Common Prayer, in the morning prayer, there's this phrase in the confession, there is no health in me, in us, I think it is. There is no health in us. And people have been saying that over and over again for about 500 years. And Judith Russell speaks a little bit about this, actually, in her book about shame. You know, it's really, firstly, it's not true. There is plenty of health in us. There is plenty of good in us. And we need to be careful, I think, about how we speak about ourselves. And what we and how we speak to ourselves about ourselves, because we cannot possibly connect, make a positive connection with our body if we believe there is no health in us.
Yeah,
it's just not possible. So it's these things are quite deeply ingrained, I think. You know, what is true is that, you know, all that is good in us, all that is flourishing and health-giving is ultimately sourced in God, is all sourced in the divine. And these are things that we can give thanks for and come to appreciate and enjoy at the same time as honouring God. So I do think that's quite a big obstacle, really.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because there's hundreds of years of theological thought in that phrase, there is no health in us. You know, it relates into sin and our obedience under God and our need for reconciliation. So it's complicated stuff.
It is complicated.
And it's deep. But for me, I think a lot of this, I think that's why I want to pick up again on your word mission. If we want church to grow, that's not where we start. There's no health in us. Especially if we're thinking one in four, as the Adverse Childhood Experience Survey showed, one in four adults between the ages of 25 and 75 were traumatized as children. We're dealing with significant trauma in our community. So how we promote what we do and how we frame these difficult conversations around what it is to be a human being, I need some careful thought, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And just if you want people to come in our doors.
Yeah. I mean, I think that phrase is from one of the Psalms, isn't it? And it expresses how the psalmist felt on a particular day.
Mm.
And we can all identify with that, but it's not necessarily helpful to kind of keep repeating it as a statement of fact.
Yeah, it needs much more unpacking, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I have to say, the devil's advocate, that's the wrong thing I'm looking for. But I quite enjoy just pausing when I preach. I don't preach that much. And inviting people just to breathe and just to come present. You can feel that this is really different. This is a bit countercultural. Why are we not just listening with our brains and getting them? So that's something I've used, certainly, to get to remind people they've got bodies and remind myself I've got a body in church. What else can people do if they're church leaders or ordinary lay Christians in our communities, to just do some awareness raising around the power of being embodied in terms of our relationship with God?
Well, yeah, I think it all comes down really to the same kind of practices for me. So just taking time to slow down. I mean, as you were saying, just taking time to slow down, to notice the flow of your breathing, to notice how your body moves with the breath, to make, you know, remember the link between the flow of our breathing and the presence of the Spirit with us, just maybe laying a hand on part of the body, just to kind of deepen that sense of connection with your body, blessing the parts of the body in the way that we perhaps offering them to God is in the way that we live. So just very simple things, really, and maybe just bring in some words as well, maybe something like, "Come, Holy Spirit, thank you for your presence. Help me to be open to you. You're leading in my life." Just all of these, they're so simple things. It sounds like it would be, you know, nothing really. But actually to do them can be really, really make a big shift. And the other important thing is just not to judge yourself, not to be critical, not to be. Sometimes, you know, I go into a congregation, I have a chat with people at the beginning and I say what we're going to be doing, and then they say, "Oh, I'm going to be rubbish at that." It's like immediately you kind of go into this kind of judgment about, you know, the right and wrong of it. And that's just something to really catch and try and release, because God just loves it when we come before him with the whole of our being, you know. I think God just delights in that.
If we can return to where we began, talk a bit about dance again, because there's something really joyful, isn't there, about dance, about connecting and freeing. You know, it's there in our Bible when, you know, Miriam, when they all got through the Reed Sea, Miriam danced. And there's, we're in a society where maybe we've all watched Strictly Come Dancing and we think dance has to be like that. And in my head always, do you remember that song, Baz Luhrmann's song about wearing sunscreen? And says dance even if you've got nowhere to do it except your own kitchen. Yes. And there's something really joyful in that, maybe especially if no one's looking.
Yeah,
we can all
exactly.
Take a moment just to connect and be silly and move and find that joy again in some of this. Where does joy sit for you in amongst all of this?
Oh, well, I think it's really, really at the heart of it, to be honest, because once you kind of can connect without being judged and without judging yourself, then you can begin to really taste movement and just appreciate it. And you know, movement generally, you know, can feel great. You know, it sort of affirms our sense of being alive. We can sense into what feels good. It kind of feels good to have a stretch, feels good to just shake out the tension. It can feel calming. It can feel energizing. And it can just really enable us to just delight in the sense of being alive, really.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Rachel, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and insight with us today. You know how I want to finish this episode? You're probably not going to like it, but that it's that Strictly thing that goes, "Keep dancing." Yeah, because that's, you know what? You're doing amazing work in terms of healing. You're doing just such needed work, I think, for the church and Christians today, reminding them they've got bodies and the seeking of the divine through the body. It's really needed in our church today. But I'm so glad we've come round at the end and talked a bit about joy, because it's really exciting, vital, life-giving work. So thank you for being with us on the podcast.
Pleasure.
And you know, the conversation doesn't stop with this podcast at Go Health. We will continue it. We're going to pick up the conversation over in our Go Health community, where we have a space where together we seek to flourish in health and healing, having tuned into people like Rachel to give us some ideas. As a member of the Go Health community, you'll receive weekly blessings, weekly inspiration, access to all our online courses, and a chance to connect with others in our online gathering, others who also share this vision of health and faith working hand in hand. And you can find out more over on gohealth.org.uk. In our show notes, we will share some links about Rachel's work and her book as well. So finally, thank you hugely to Rosie Dawson for producing this podcast, and to Wendy Lloyd for all her work on both the podcast and the Go Health community. So until next time, thank you for listening, and may you know God's joy and healing presence in your life.